Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Caritas. Today is January 8th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. Title of today's podcast is Act of War or Not. Because we had President Donald Trump come out this morning, as was announced last evening, that he would be coming out giving an announcement, making a speech in regards to the Iranian retaliation on Iraqi Air Force bases that house U.S. troops. He did so. Typically, you're going to see the president give these speeches on his own, maybe in the Oval Office, maybe in the Roosevelt Room, maybe in the East Room. Typically, again, by himself. Today was not the case. He was surrounded by the vice president, secretary of defense, and a handful of generals. And that's fine. I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just saying it's a little bit of a deviation from what one typically sees in these types of speeches and these types of responses. Well, what did the president mention today? Well, if you listened to yesterday's podcast, when we went and gave a lesson on American and Iranian history, just a very brief overview from the book, The Shah's Men, which I said was written by Stephen Kinzner. Check it out. And we went through that, and I'm going to go a little bit more in detail with some other things on that today. But I said, what year were they going to focus on? 1979. And wouldn't you know it, today, President Donald Trump brings up the year 1979. Doesn't go back far enough. Doesn't go back to the 1950s when Iran had a Democratic prime minister, Mohammad Mossadegh, who was reaching out to the Americans for help, for assistance, to grow that country, to grow that economy, to make it a democracy and a republic within the Middle East. 1950s, not 1979, not 78, 77, 1950s. They never want to go back that far because they don't want to give you the full picture. I'm not an apologist for Iran, not for a second. But I'm not going to excuse our behavior either, because if we excuse our behavior, then we're sanctioning it. Then we're saying it's okay. It's okay to give the American people and the world a false narrative. It's okay not to give the people the true context, the true history of everything. Just pick a year, pick your poison, and continue on with that narrative. If we sanction this behavior, then we're no better than anybody else. Then it's going to be the same thing over and over and over again. So why even talk about it? Just, yep, go ahead. Go bomb the hell out of whatever country you want to. Pick a date as to when they started becoming a problem. Don't worry about the true history of the matter. Say what you want, because you're going to anyways. And just continue on. Don't vote. Don't debate these things. This is the game. That's the system. Just do your thing. But if you don't want this to be a game, if you don't want this to be the system, if you do want to have a vote that matters, then you have to be educated. And you have to hold the people in power to account. You have to hold their feet to the fire. You have to ask tough questions. Some of the questions are very simple. You have to show simple analogies. Why is it okay for us to do it, but not okay for somebody else to do it? That's a simple question. You can ask that till you're blue in the face. There are so many analogies that come over with what America has done over the past century compared to what other countries do or have not done but are accused of doing. This is not the country that our founders created. I've been saying it here frequently, but I've said it in the past. One man's patriot is another man's terrorist. Well, guess what? Guess who was a terrorist in 1775, 1776? Our founding fathers. Our founding fathers were terrorists, as far as the British crown was concerned. Who would you have sided with? Would you yourself have been a terrorist in the late 18th century? In the 13 colonies here in the United States? Would you have just sat on your fingers, sat on your hands, saying, well, I'm just going to, you know, I kind of like what they're doing, but I don't want to be branded a terrorist. But I'm not going to stay loyal to the crown, so I'm just going to sit on my hands, and I'm going to see who wins, and then I'll join that group. Or would you have remained loyal to the British crown? One man's patriot is another man's terrorist. Again today, Donald Trump in his speech, it was a short speech, which again is fine, talked about that. He brought that up. He said, we killed a terrorist, one of the worst terrorists in the world, an Iranian General Soleimani, calling him a terrorist. That's fine. Go ahead and do it. But guess what Iran has done through an official act of their parliament? Calling American forces and American officials, branding them as terrorists. So when does this stop? It's not going to, because nobody wants to take this seriously, because this is all a game. It's from the same playbook. We've been talking about this for the past few podcasts. It's almost verbatim, the same playbook. There was an imminent attack. That's what the intelligence told us. Donald Trump, since he was a candidate, has been saying he's been doubtful of American intelligence, that he was more inclined to believe President Vladimir Putin over our intelligence agencies when it came to Russian meddling in our election in 2016. Now, all of a sudden, we have the best intelligence ever. He ridiculed the intelligence assessment back in 2002, which said, Mr. President, it's a slam dunk. Saddam Hussein and Iraq have weapons of mass destruction. We go over there, we spend billions and billions of dollars that we don't have. We lose hundreds of lives, thousands injured, tens of thousands on the Iraqi side killed, hundreds of thousands turned into refugees, infrastructure demolished, businesses ruined, lives destroyed. No weapons of mass destruction. And then President George W. Bush has the audacity to get up in front of a press dinner, one of those stupid press dinners that they have to congratulate themselves down in Washington, D.C., to joke about it, to look under the dais. Well, there's no weapons of mass destruction under there. Is this a joke? Is it a joke if your son or daughter comes home in a flag-draped coffin? Is this funny? You feel like a tough guy? Because some of the, here's an analogy for you, here's another little piece of tough guy rhetoric for you. Because according to Senator Lindsey Graham, this was an act of war, what Iran did to the United States of America. Was it an act of war when we assassinated their top general? Furthermore, let's go back a couple of decades when you really had Al-Qaeda in full swing and you had some masterminds. And let's just use Osama bin Laden as an example. You know, you have the likes of Lindsey Graham and so many others that will come out and say, yeah, these masterminds, they're real tough. They convince younger people to go fight for their cause, strap suicide vests to themselves, and then go blow themselves up. But surprisingly, they, being the masterminds, being Osama bin Laden, they never go along for the ride. Huh. Ain't that a shocker? I don't see Lindsey Graham going along for the ride either. Joe Lieberman. George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld. I don't see all these tough guys going along for the ride either. Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Mark Levin. You want to go? You want to play the tough guy? Then you sign up and you go. This is serious. And still, to this day, nobody knows the end game. That was a podcast title the other night. What's the end game? What's the goal? Because we were told it's not regime change. That's what Donald Trump said a few days ago. This is not regime change. That's what we were told by George W. Bush. Again, the same playbook, the same verbiage. Just a different puppet in the Oval Office. That's all it is. There's no swamp being drained. During that speech this morning, Donald Trump patted himself on the back once again, congratulating himself on spending $2.5 trillion on our Defense Department over the past few years, with no end in sight. That's the swamp. The military-industrial complex is the swamp. The banks that finance this system, that's the swamp. The war machine that continues, that's the swamp. Trillion-dollar deficits that we have once again is the swamp. A Federal Reserve that is out of freaking control, putting in tens of billions in liquidity on an overnight basis to keep these markets artificially inflated, that is the swamp. Boom time? Boom town? I don't think so. Record low unemployment? Well, then we shouldn't have trillion-dollar deficits. Best economy ever? Then we shouldn't have trillion-dollar deficits. If everybody's making so much money and everybody's employed, then we should be raking in the dough. And you know what that means? Not trillion-dollar deficits. That means we should have a surplus. Or at least be breaking even. We're not even close. And this is supposed to be the best time ever. The best economy ever. You have to be beyond dumb if you believe this rhetoric that comes out of this White House or anybody else who is peddling this narrative. You're not paying attention. You're not listening to a word I say if you have been following me for some time. You have been hoodwinked. You have been lied to. There is no great difference between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. None. A little bit more money goes to these people, or a little bit more goes to them, depending on who's in power, and that's it. The banks get bigger, there's more consolidation of industry, the Federal Reserve gets more powerful and more out of control, deficits get larger, not smaller. That's the swamp. Saber-rattling once again in the Middle East with a stronger adversary in Iran, still overtly staging a coup down in Venezuela. Of course, that's not talked about too much anymore, but it's still going on. Global protests everywhere. Everybody is ticked off because they have reached their breaking point. Because everybody is sick and tired of the corruption, the nepotism, the fraud, and the abuse of their lives. They're sick and tired of it. I've said it here many, many times. The only leadership that exists in this world are those people in some of the poorest countries on this planet who have decided to take to the streets to protest. That's it. That's it. Because there is no great leadership here in the United States, unfortunately. It's not in Russia. It's not in China. It's not in Hong Kong, except with those people protesting. There's nowhere to be found. It's nowhere to be found. It is the same song and dance on a nightly basis. It's the same song and dance on a yearly basis. Nobody talks about the crux of the problem. Everybody wants to pick on all of these little issues that have nothing to do with the fundamental issues that I have just rattled off here for the past few minutes. So Donald Trump, in his speech this morning, once again brings up 1979, calls the Iranians terrorists. The Iranians, in response, call us terrorists. Brings up the $150 billion that was given to the Iranians during the Obama administration all the way back in 2013, saying that money spent was on the weapons that were used to attack Americans. They spent that money a long time ago, folks. That was 7 years ago. It's gone. It's gone. Governments go through money like water. Okay, you think they still have that $150 billion? And a lot of it was owed to other countries for a lot of debts that the Iranian regime was owed. Okay. And now we were talking about de-escalation. Good. Good. I don't retaliate. I don't want further retaliation. I don't want escalation. But then what does Donald J. Trump say? Well, we're going to up the ante even further on maximum pressure. And we're going to put even more economic sanctions on the Iranians. This in and of itself can be construed as an act of war. We would not tolerate it here for a moment. I'm sure Lindsey Graham would be screaming from the rooftops that that was an act of war if Iran did something to put us under economic sanctions. They don't have the ability to do it. But if they did, that would be construed as an act of war by Lindsey Graham, and I'm sure there'd be others as well. So this really isn't any type of de-escalation. It's just not lobbing bombs back and forth, which is a good thing. Which is a good thing, and I've given President Donald J. Trump credit many, many times on not taking us to war and not escalating things. But increasing economic sanctions, that's escalation. That's not de-escalation. Assassinating a top Iranian general, that's escalation, not de-escalation. Now, hopefully there's some serious back-channeling going on and there's some serious diplomacy taking place and we can get back to the negotiating table and we can call this whole thing off when it comes to any war or any type of conflict, because Donald Trump has 52 sites that he's going to attack if they retaliate, and Iran has 100 sites that they're going to attack if we respond. So, I mean, it's just one thing after the other. When's it going to end? How many people need to be killed? How many? You know, I'm sure many of you have disagreements with your next-door neighbor. You might not like how they take care of their house. You might not like how they talk to their kids. You might not like the clothes they wear. They might smell. You might not like the religion they practice. You go next door and kill them? Do you? I don't think so. You can have some tolerance. That's what the United States is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about freedom. And freedom is about tolerance. And you have to understand your history, too. Because another thing I want to get to, when it comes to All the Shaw's Men, that book that I referenced yesterday, there's some more history there that you have to understand because it's imperative. Because it wasn't the United States who was the first in Iran to start meddling in their affairs. It was the British. It was the British. And they struck oil. And they set up, and of course this is going to be basically long story short, but nevertheless, it's still imperative to the story, to the history, to the context. The British were there. We said, well, we struck oil. We're going to come over here and we're going to take it because that's what the British did. That's what the British did. That was the British Empire. The sun never set on the British Empire because they were ruthless. They believed in imperialism. That was their method. That's what they did. Well, they did that in Iran. They struck oil. They send their engineers over there. They send their technicians over there. They set up shop to extract that oil. They create a company that's called the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company. The Anglo-Iranian Oil Company. That company later becomes British Petroleum. You know it today as BP. You probably put BP gasoline in your vehicle or you've driven by them. Okay? The British extract this oil. They take it and they sell it and they profit from it. They have Iranians working for them to extract the oil. They have them working and living in terrible, terrible conditions. Terrible conditions. For years, this is going on. These people, these Iranians, get upset, as anybody would. During this time, you have a very corrupt Iranian government in place who is being paid off by the British. Keep them happy. This happens today. This happens today all over the world. From U.S. dollars, Saudi dollars, British dollars, whole bunch of countries do this. The Chinese do this. Everybody does this. Pay off people, dictators, keep them in power. Don't worry about the people. Because we're after the resource. We'll pay you off. You can live like kings and queens and dictators. Do what you want, but we're going to keep the people down. That's exactly what the British were doing to the Iranians. You understand this? You understand the historical context, the importance of this? Okay, because this is what it leads to. These people get upset. They want to overthrow their government because they know what's going on. They're not stupid. They understand what the British are doing. They understand that they're keeping their government propped up, that they are the puppet masters, that the British are profiting off of their natural resource, off of their virtually slave labor. And they say, enough's enough. We want an election. And they vote in Mohammad Mossadegh. That's what they did. Well, the British didn't like that because Mossadegh comes into power and his platform is, this is Iran. This is our natural resource. We're going to benefit from this. They're not just going to come over here and extract it and profit off of our labor and call it a day. That's fair. Some people might call that nationalistic. Some people might call that populism. I don't care what you call it. That was the fact of the matter. And that put in place, for the first time, a democratic leader in Iran. And this individual, Mohammad Mossadegh, wanted to work with the United States of America because he did not associate the British with the United States of America. Yes, they're Western powers. Yes, they share the same types of ideals. But he separated them. He didn't say they're one and the same. He said, we're not going to work with the British people. We're not going to work with the Anglo-Iranian oil company. We're not going to do it. And if we do, they're going to have to cater to some of our demands. There's going to have to be more profit sharing. There's going to have to be better working and living conditions for the people out in these oil fields. Not too much to ask. But it was for the British. And at the time, it was still Winston Churchill who was in charge. And he didn't like that. Old Winston did not like that. He said, nah, this is our technology. If it wasn't for us, you wouldn't even know what to do to get it out of the ground. You'd be putting sticks and straws in the ground, and that'd be it, if you were lucky. So consider yourself fortunate that we're here, And if you're living in squalor and if you're living under these conditions, well, that's too bad because you wouldn't have anything. That's the idea. That's the mentality that existed and still exists. But regardless of this, Mossadegh still wanted to work with America, and he reached out to President Truman. Now, President Truman had no idea who this guy was. I have no idea who Mohammad Mossadegh is. I have no idea what's going on over there in Iran. It's not a concern, We just ended World War II. He's fighting in Korea. All of this stuff is taking place. He doesn't know who this guy out of nowhere in Iran is. But he does know who Winston Churchill is. He does know who the British people are. And during this time, all of this stuff going on, the British attempt a coup. They attempt to overthrow Mohammad Mossadegh. But they don't pull it off. They're unsuccessful. And I think, if memory serves me well, they've tried a few times, and they were unsuccessful on multiple attempts. But not to be deterred, Winston Churchill said, I know what I can do. I can convince my ally, my partner, my friend, the United States of America, because I know that Mossadegh is reaching out to the Americans, and I know there's not really any type of strong relationship at this time. But I can create interference. I can create division. And I can make the Americans side with the British people, with the British government. And that's exactly what happened. Through diplomatic means and this, that, and the other, the British convinced the United States, they convinced Harry Truman to stage a coup to overthrow Mohammad Mossadegh, to reinstate the Shah. And that's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. And that was not in 1979. It was in the 1950s. And ever since then, that gave fertile soil to all of the Islamic fundamentalists who were screaming from the rooftops even back then that there was Western interference, that there was this, that, and the other, that they don't care about the Iranian people, they don't care about the religion of Islam and this, that, and the other. And a whole bunch of people were saying, yeah, that's a bunch of nonsense, this, that, and the other, it's conspiracy theories. Well, guess what? When you have the Western powers coming in and doing those things that these lunatics have been spouting off the mouth at for years, and they say, well, you know what? Yeah, he's been telling the truth. Let's start listening to this guy, because he turned out to be right. And in very short order, those people come to power, and then you have 1979. Then you have your 1979 and all of the havoc that's come since then. So it's all about oil. It's what it's all about. That's the military-industrial complex. It's all about the war machine. It's all about imperialism. It's not about Americanism. This country has been hijacked years ago. I hope you understand this. Doesn't matter if you're a Republican or a Democrat. You get this? Book after book after book. All the Shah's Men. My book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing. A book by a highly decorated United States Marine written 100 years ago from General Smedley Butler, saying war is a racket, understanding very early on, 100 plus years ago, that he wasn't fighting for the U.S. Constitution. He was not fighting for liberty and freedom. He was not fighting for American values. He was fighting for American corporations. He was going into countries all over the world to clear the way so that U.S. corporations could come in behind him, to exploit those resources and to have those people in those countries live in squalor and work for very low wages. That's not the American way. We've been hijacked long time ago. A long time ago. Lastly, I do want to take, because I said this a couple days ago, that I wanted to read a little bit from my book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing, on our chapter titled War, What Is It Good For? We'll tell you, because this is an investing book, and how to sort of connect the dots from various industries and how to profit from it. Sometimes, as sick and disgusting as that might be, well, guess what? They're taking your money. You might as well get some of it back. I'm not going to read clearly the whole chapter to you, but just a couple things so you understand where we are and how this is all connected. So let me read this. In addition to this, recall our brief discussion on Bretton Woods and how the U.S. dollar became the world's reserve currency, where through various arrangements, foreign currencies were tied to the U.S. dollar, which in turn was tied to gold. Given this newly gained power, those in government and industry intended to exploit it to their advantages as much as possible. It was just over a decade later that President Dwight D. Eisenhower warned the American people during his farewell address of the military-industrial complex, quote, "In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist." It was only a few short years following this speech that the United States entangled itself in the jungles of Vietnam. Coupled with the domestic policy of President Lyndon Johnson's Great Society, the United States would later default when President Richard Nixon closed the gold window in 1971. This action would then give rise to the petrodollar. What this new mechanism was designed to do was to create an artificial demand for U.S. dollars, thereby maintaining its status as the world's reserve currency. This would be achieved by making oil tradable in only U.S. dollars, thus compelling foreign nations to hold U.S. dollars as part of their reserves. We believe this to be the root of many geopolitical tensions. There you have it, folks. It's in black and white. You can't make it any clearer. It's what this is all about. It's about natural resources. It's about natural gas. It's about oil. It's about dominance. It's about treating people as commodities as opposed to people, as opposed to fathers and mothers and sons and daughters, brothers and sisters. It's commodities. Everybody's a commodity, not a person. The soul, the spirit, whatever you want to say, has been taken. It's been destroyed piece by piece, bit by bit. It's all about profit. It's all about money. It's all about power. I have no idea what the end game is going into Iran. I have none whatsoever. I hear no strategy from Donald Trump. I heard no strategy from Barack Obama. I heard no strategy from George W. Bush. And you can go back further. I have no idea. I have no idea what the strategy is from various prime ministers, from the United Kingdom, or anywhere else for that matter. What's the end game? How many people have to die? How many resources have to be extracted? What's the goal? What's the purpose? I hope there is true de-escalation. I hope the United States and Iran can sit down together and iron all of this out. I am very skeptical of that. Very skeptical of that because of everything that I just mentioned. You have to understand this history to understand where we're likely headed. Doesn't mean that past is prologue. It doesn't mean that it has to happen the way that it did in the past. But if history is any guide, and history is usually a very good guide, it might not repeat, but it does often rhyme. Act of War or Not was the title of today's podcast. I guess we make that decision. Or do we? Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kritis. Godspeed.